From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
We must abandon the failed policy of nation building and regime change that Hillary Clinton pushed in Iraq, in Libya, in Egypt, and in Syria.
That was then presidential candidate Donald Trump speaking at the Republican National Convention July 21st, 2016. It appears that his administration has decided against that policy and is seeking actively regime change in Venezuela. RT's Caleb Maupin has more.
Juan Guaido has declared himself to be the interim president of Venezuela. He's choosing not to recognize the inauguration of Nicolas Maduro, the president who was just sworn in. No election took place to select Juan Guaido, who's the head of the National Assembly. At this point, he is granting no legitimacy to the Venezuelan state. And it's worth noting that the U.S. government loves him. This is what was said by U.S. Vice President Mike Pence.
Nicolas Maduro is a dictator with no legitimate claim to power who has oppressed the Venezuelan people for far too long. The United States strongly supports the courageous decision by Juan Guaido, the president of the National Assembly, to invoke constitutional protections and declare the country's presidency vacant.
Now, at this point, rumors are circulating that Donald Trump is planning to recognize the unelected leader Guaido as Venezuela's head of state. Marco Rubio, the U.S. senator, is trumpeting the call.
From the U.S.'s perspective, since we've recognized the legitimate presidency of the National Assembly's president, pending a new election, I think that the time has come to expel the Maduro-appointed ambassadors and allow the new constitutional president to appoint replacements.
The Washington Post even gave a platform to Guaido, publishing an op-ed that he wrote. Now, doesn't that sound a lot like foreign meddling? The USA has been pretty open about choosing to side with the opposition against Venezuela's government. Back when she was in office, this is what Nikki Haley said at the United Nations.
The systematic oppression of the Venezuelan people has become an active threat to the entire region for the safety and the security of all peoples in Latin America. It is time for Maduro to go.
Now, back in September, the White House would not deny that it had met with people that were plotting a coup to overthrow the Venezuelan government. When asked about the issue, it simply gave a vague statement about democracy. And since then, we've actually heard Donald Trump calling for the violent overthrow of the Venezuelan government.
It's a regime that, frankly, could be toppled very quickly by the military if the military decides to do that.
Now, the Washington Post and the New York Times, two top newspapers in the USA, have both published op-eds calling for the military to overthrow the elected government in Venezuela. Now, U.S. leaders say this is simply out of humanitarian concerns. They only want to intervene to rescue those poor, oppressed Venezuelans.
Socialism has bankrupted the oil-rich nation and driven its people into abject poverty.
So we've seen the completion of Venezuela's collapse into dictatorship.
We have many options for Venezuela, including a possible military option.
There is no greater challenge today than the full-scale dismantling of democracy and the heartbreaking humanitarian disaster in Venezuela.
But how exactly can U.S. leaders claim that they know what average Venezuelans want?
Venezuela is facing a deepening economic, political, and social crisis, but we can't possibly understand this crisis or see a way out of the crisis without understanding U.S. intervention. And the U.S. has been trying to topple this government since the year 2001. And so, I mean, the U.S. is not promoting democracy in Venezuela. The U.S. is stepping up in intervention in a moment in which it sees that it now has an actual possibility of overthrowing the government. The U.S. particularly is threatening to recognize this opposition as the legitimate government. And it is threatening to impose a heightened oil sanction so that it would no longer import Venezuelan oil and refine it in the United States. The purpose is not to bring democracy. The U.S. doesn't intervene in other countries in order to bring democracy to those countries. It intervenes in order to secure its own interests. So it bolsters, recognizes, and props up dictatorships when it's in the U.S. interest to do so. And it tries to bring about regime change through elections in which it intervenes in those elections.
So, the USA says that it wants democracy in Venezuela. Well, nothing sounds more democratic than having the military roll into the capital and overthrow the elected leaders. Caleb Maupin, RT, New York.
The last US-backed coup in Venezuela took place in April of 2002. The coup government lasted for 3 days until it was removed by the people of Venezuela. Subsequent to that coup, there were 4 presidential elections held, 2 saw the re-election of President Hugo Chavez, and 2, the election and re-election of President Nicolas Maduro. On Wednesday, Venezuela's Minister for Foreign Affairs, Jorge Arreaza, spoke at the United Nations in New York and held a press conference.
Buenas tardes.
Good afternoon.
Gracias, muy buenas tardes.
Thank you, and once again, a very good afternoon. Good afternoon, as it is here in New York, of course, the headquarters of the United Nations, which is peculiarly located in New York. But that's not the point we wish to dwell on. We're here in New York because we have to be. That's where UNHQ is. We've heard a very cordial, affectionate, and respectful meeting with the Secretary General of the United Nations, Secretary General Antonio Guterres. We conveyed to him the open feelings and affection of President Nicolas Maduro at the beginning of this new constitutional period, this new 6-year term of the government, a 6-year term in which President Maduro intends, as he said since 2015, a point that he made at the 70th session of the General Assembly, a 70th session at which all member states of this House agreed, the entire United Nations multilateral system agreed to craft and adopt the 2030 agenda. Since 2015, since that 70th anniversary and the adoption of the 2030 agenda, President Nicolas Maduro has incorporated in national plans of action the 17 sustainable development goals contained within the 2030 agenda, the 2030 plan of the United Nations, and he intends to do that going forward in this new 6-year term. And this is based on the understanding, the hypothesis, that if in this 21st century, the globe, the world, despite our current circumstances and despite the resurgence of fascism that we're seeing in various corners, despite the difficulties and the attempt to impose hegemony and a single political pole or polar way of thinking, if despite all those challenges we manage to achieve each of those 17 sustainable development goals by 2030, then in the dawn of 2031 we'll be faced with a better, more equal, more fair, more just society. From many perspectives, it could be rightly claimed that this would be a social revolution for humanity if we manage to succeed in achieving the Sustainable Development Goals as crafted by the United Nations. So this is a critical juncture. It is a time for us to strengthen multilateralism against the assault being waged against it, the many unilateral attacks that are intending to beat it down. The United Nations needs to step up with a more robust voice and with greater force to counter those forces attacking multilateralism. We have the Homeland Plan in Venezuela, which is our plan for the government for this 6-year term, 2019 to 2025. We have incorporated all 17 SDGs in that Homeland Plan. They are cross-cutting in the plan. Each of the 17 Sustainable Development Goals is captured in across the Homeland Plan. Rigorous work has gone into achieving the SDGs and to crafting the 6-year plan since 2015 by teams led by the president himself in order to ensure that the national plan for development that we have crafted fully matches the 2030 Sustainable Development Agenda to deliver a better country, but not just a better Venezuela, a better region and a better humanity as a whole. As I'm sure you're aware, in Venezuela, we have 2 founding charters, our own constitution, our sacred constitution, and we will allow no one to attempt to trample on or to interfere with this charter, this constitution, or to misinterpret it. And we also have the Charter of the United Nations, which, as far as we're concerned, is also a sacred document. The founding principles contained therein, the respect for the independence and sovereignty of peoples, for peace, security, and for human rights enshrined therein as sacred jures, as is the concept enshrined therein of non-interference in the internal affairs of other nations. With these 2 instruments, the Bolivarian Revolution on the 2nd of February will mark its 20th anniversary, 20 years of the Bolivarian Revolution seeking to ensure popular government in Venezuela. Since the presidential palace of Miraflores 20 years ago, Commander Hugo Chavez took up office and made that solemn promise to the people of this revolution on their behalf. An attempt to ensure that Venezuela's fate in the 21st century would not be a mere colony or outpost of the United States and their thinking. This has been 20 years of revolution, which will now continue for a further 6 years at least with this fresh mandate of President Nicolas Maduro. As you're all aware, this new mandate is the legitimate fruit of last year's constitutional electoral process, in which President Maduro was elected by a wide margin, receiving more than 67% of the votes cast in the presidential election last year. As of the 24th of October, which happens to be United Nations Day in 2018, President Maduro chose that day to breathe new life into the joint work between Venezuela and the United Nations system in Venezuela, the country teams there. Not just incorporating the Sustainable Development Goals in the government work in our National Development Plan, but also taking concrete, tangible steps to work more closely with the UN system. We signed a key agreement with UNICEF last year, and just 2 days ago, we signed a similar robust agreement with the FAO and also updated our agreement with UNICEF to focus on education in Venezuela in partnership. And on the 12th of January, we had a meeting with FAO and UNICEF, and which gave rise to these new agreements. And I just want you to recognize that date. On the 10th of January, President Maduro was sworn in for his new term as president. Just 2 days later, he turned his attention to working to strengthening the partnership with the UN system operating in Venezuela, having that key meeting with the FAO and UNICEF. He's also working very closely with other UN agencies and systems in Venezuela. And here we are, 2 or 3 days later, in New York at the headquarters of the United Nations, engaging in conversation and dialogue with the Secretary General of the United Nations. The Secretary General is aware of the reality in Venezuela and has always declared his willingness to support and to help, and has also underscored the point that the Venezuelan people themselves are those who should, on a sovereign basis, resolve any issues. It's up to Venezuelans to decide the course of their future for themselves without the interference or meddling of any other country or government. This has been a key point made by Secretary General Antonio Guterres, which he confirmed once again to us today. It is up to the Venezuelans and the Venezuelans alone to decide on their path for the future, to find the way forward and to find the solutions politically, economically, wherever it may be, to continue to take the steps along the path towards a development and full peace in Venezuela. We denounced to the Secretary General in no uncertain terms that the fact that once again we are seeing nefarious attempts to deliver a coup d'etat in Venezuela. I'm sure you're familiar with contemporary history of Venezuela. It's no easy matter to drive forward a socialist revolution so many miles away from cities such as Washington, because you're still within the orbit of Washington. It's difficult for any country in Latin America to pursue a socialist path, to try and give power back to the people as you're still in the orbit of Washington. As you have seen over the last 20 years in Latin America and Venezuela, you see the pressure that this gives rise to, but we still press on, we forge on. There was the attempt at a coup d'etat in 2002, the sabotaging of our oil industry in 2002-2003. We saw terrorist attempts financed from outside in 2004, attempts to target Comandante Chavez. Through 20 years, there are so many such events that I could list for you, such nefarious and egregious attempts. They seem to have ramped up in frequency over the last 5 years, but targeting President Maduro. But President Maduro rests in the conviction that he has a mandate from the Venezuelan people. Despite that, there is a non-stop onslaught from the United States of America, from its government, from its leaders, and from satellite governments who are caught up as lackeys or in the orbit of the United States of America to try and engage in regime change through force, through an intervention, ignoring and running roughshod over the Constitution. Today, this very morning, Secretary of State Pompeo cited articles of this sacred Constitution of Venezuela. And using our Constitution, he is trying to promote a coup d'etat in Venezuela, the overthrow of the government. This, if it were not so serious, would be absurd. It would be risible. It would be laughable. The Constitution of Venezuela is crystal clear. We are a free and independent nation. Our sovereignty is sacred. Nobody may meddle with it. It resides in the people. The people are the fount of our sovereignty, and no foreign government can take decisions in or for Venezuela or seek to manipulate the circumstances in Venezuela. That said, if I can take you back to March of 2015, President Barack Obama assigned a rather strange decree declaring Venezuela a threat and a unique threat to international peace and security. Nobody understands the sense of this decree or what happened to it. But once that step was taken, we saw coming in 2017 the extremist government of Donald Trump, who has taken concrete steps, not content just to sign a decree as President Obama did, but taken concrete steps against Venezuela. We are the victims of an economic blockade similar to that which Cuba has labored under for more than 60 years now. We have been subject to a blockade in terms of banking and economy and finance. There are many people who are afraid of working with Venezuela, supporting Venezuela, because they fear the shadow of sanctions being imposed upon them by the United States of America, which target what in many instances are international banking, a massive overreach. It's difficult for the Venezuelan government, therefore, as a result of this unnecessary and unjust pressure, to get its hands on the resources it needs to be able to provide for the healthcare or for the feeding of our people. And when we do so, those who are willing to trade with us or to provide us these resources suffer this same hammer of pressure. This is a price paid by the people of Venezuela. The government of the United States of America is therefore directly responsible for the situation and the plight of the people of Venezuela. This is a point that we've made loud and clear time and again as Venezuelans. This is persecution. This is no mere blockade, but persecution. You could take the example of the fact that there are $1.2 billion Venezuelan dollars which are stuck in clearing houses in Brussels in Belgium, stuck there as a result of the meddling and tampering by the United States of America, blocked arbitrarily. This money, which could pay for medicines, could pay for food, could pay for infrastructure, and there's no explanation as to why it's stuck there, why it's not released to us. There's also the way that the United States of America has been putting pressure on and Citgo, the oil refinery company. And this targets directly a resource of the Venezuelan people, our oil. It's a Venezuelan oil refinery, but the money that it earns cannot be repatriated to Venezuela to pay for our projects because of the pressure put by the United States of America and their interference, the web that they have woven in international financial markets and within banks as well. And we have seen the theatre, the playing to the gallery over the last few days of people such as Secretary of State Pompeo trying to push for regime change in Venezuela and the ousting of the legitimate government. There are five legitimate organs of government in Venezuela according to the Constitution. They have been legitimately elected from the president on down, but we also have the people, the fount of our legitimacy. They cast their votes legitimately last year when they elected President Maduro once again. In 2017, they also elected the Constituent Assembly. 8 million votes were cast. We've also had votes for governorates in Venezuela, of mayors as well. A clear expression of our thriving democracy under the fact that we have popular support for the Constituent Assembly, for the governorates, for the mayoralties, and also for our president. This is clear by the sheer quantity of votes cast in these elections. There are attempts, nonetheless, to try and undermine this free expression of Venezuela's will. But they will not succeed. We will continue to strive forward. President Maduro has always called for national dialogue. A year ago, leaders were together in the Dominican Republic. Spokespersons of the various delegations, including the constitutional government of Venezuela, who were there speaking with members of the opposition, managed to reach verbally agreements. So we are engaging in dialogue with the opposition. We did that in the Dominican Republic. These were talks sponsored by the President of the Dominican Republic, and you can see the outcome document, what agreements were reached. But when we got to the last furlong, everything ready to sign in Santo Domingo, the government delegation was there with the pen poised to sign. And when the delegation of the Venezuelan opposition arrived there, leaders, they decided at the very last moment not to sign the Santo Domingo Agreement, to pull the rug out from under us despite all those good faith negotiations and those agreements. Despite the failure of the opposition to sign, for us, the Santo Domingo Agreement still holds force. We still follow the principles contained therein. And at this fresh political moment in Venezuela, when we're continuing on the course of the Bolivarian Revolution with its shining goal of bringing further democracy to Venezuelan society, we will not be deterred from that. I'm sure you will have seen or heard from the lackeys of the United States government and from the United States government itself the same talking points. Dictator, dictator, dictator. This is an insult to the Venezuelan people. In 1958, however many years ago that was, 60 plus, that was the last time we had a dictatorship in Venezuela, 61 years ago. And that was overthrown by the people taking to the streets. And never since 1958 have the people of Venezuela suffered under a dictatorship. And never would they again peacefully or silently allow a dictatorship to take the reins of their government. Quite the contrary, they have shown their mettle, they would take to the streets again. We know those who have brought democracy to the Venezuelan people. It is the leaders of the Bolivarian Revolution, Hugo Chavez and Nicolas Maduro, and their teams, their people. We know what corruption we rooted out. If we just take the example of education, that you could buy your degree in universities if you're wealthy enough, and we have changed that. You earn your degree now through your own dint of your own hard work. Now in Venezuela, if we look at healthcare, healthcare was not available to the ordinary man or woman. Now, if you look at Venezuela, clinics are on every street corner. Healthcare has come to you. It's available to you free of charge. It's been made available to democracy, as has housing, as has culture, access to culture and the cultural assets of the state. Access to capital and credit has also been made democratic. What was previously in the hands of the elites is now available to the ordinary man and woman to pursue their entrepreneurship and their projects. We have avoided the neoliberal path of privatization, and we have avoided the yoke of the dictatorship of capital and banking in Venezuela. Rather, we've chosen the democratic path, democracy not just for our economic sector, but also for our social sector. You have the elections for the president, for mayors, governorates in Venezuela. But in addition to that, that's not the last layer of government. You have the local councils, you have community councils. Democracy is there at that grassroots level across the land, across the nation. In every community, you have this democratic organ, this democratic body, this opportunity to express yourself democratically and openly. This did not exist 20 years ago in Venezuela, ladies and gentlemen of the press. 20 years ago, we were a closed, neo-colonial, neoliberal nation taking our orders and directions from the United States and from its neoliberal entities and from its embassies. We have advanced in the last 20 years to such an extent that people are worried. The same pressure and control that was exercised from within is now being sought to be exercised from without. You just have to look back to the attempted coup d'etat in 2002. You look at the parties, the political parties, it's the same faces who previously were part of this neoliberal order who are now part of the opposition. And we know what their history, what their background is. We have made it clear what our position is. We have made it clear how we are respecting and abiding by our constitution to the Secretary General. He listened carefully to us. And he didn't just listen to us and to what we had to say. He shared with us his input, his opinion, and his impression. And as I said, the Secretary General was abundantly clear in the point and his support for the point that it is up to the Venezuelan people themselves to decide on their fate and their future for themselves. To wrap up, I would like to share with you that in the coming years, in this six-year mandate, which is just beginning, which has a clear plan for action that will be taken despite the blockades, despite the pressure, these will be years in which we will continue to further embed and anchor Venezuelan democracy, and irrespective of who seeks to attack us or to undermine that. We, or what guise the attack says, we will always withstand such assaults and attacks with dignity based on the Constitution and on the support of the people who are the fount of our democracy. But we also have a role to play on the world stage as proponents and supporters of multilateralism. We must do our utmost to ensure that this resurgence of fascism does not succeed. Let us recall why the United Nations was set up in the first place. Let us go back to 1945, when humanity had been brought to the brink as a result of war. And the works of humanity, the culture of humanity, the art of humanity had been almost been destroyed by fascism. Nazism and fascism had been overthrown in 1945. And the United Nations was a mark, a clear demonstration of support and celebration of the fact that that blight, that shadow on human history had been overcome. But we're seeing it rising again here in the United States, but also in Europe, but also in Latin America as well. A few years ago, we set up CELAC, the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States. And there was a summit of CELAC on the 11th of December, 2011, which is when CELAC was established. At that meeting, Comandante Chavez, as the first president pro tempore, met with President Sebastián Piñera of Chile. Now, we had difference of opinion, but there was tolerance, despite those ideological differences and those different views of how the future should be shaped. These two men were able to come together and work together at the handover of the presidency pro tempore of CELAC. That is no longer the case. Now it's division, it's fraction. The unity of the Latin American and Caribbean people has been shattered. And so we're going to make a major effort so that peoples recognize their commonality, so that people actually have political power in their country, so that then peoples across borders come together and that governments represent that common shared humanity and understanding thereof across peoples. These are times for reflection, for serious thought. These are serious times. It's important for the media to play their role and to trumpet the truth and to be champions of the truth. I haven't seen any mainstream Western media outlet come out and say what the truth is, that a coup d'etat is being pursued in Venezuela. You just parrot the party line being fed to you. Dictator, dictator, dictator. Maduro is a dictator. I would appeal to you as journalists, as communicators with the people, to stand up and be counted and say what's truly and actually going on. Tell the truth of what is happening in the world, not just in Venezuela, but in Venezuela. And so you tell the truth of our story, you will enjoy the full support of Venezuela, of our government, and of President Nicolas Maduro. There's a lot to be done now for the Bolivarian Revolution. It's time for all good men and women to stand up and be counted for the next few years. But we will continue on our path without losing heart on the basis of these two documents. It was a very good meeting with the Secretary General, and I'm very grateful to you for your time with us this afternoon in this press conference. Thank you.
And now an update on Press TV anchor Marzia Hashemi, who has been held by the FBI on unspecified charges since Sunday. The latest reports are that she's due to appear in a Washington, D.C. court Friday. The 59-year-old U.S. citizen, who now lives in Iran, was detained as a material witness to a criminal case, according to authorities, and no charges are being pressed against her. The U.S. law defines a material witness as a person presumed to have information about the subject matter of a lawsuit or a criminal prosecution that's critical to the outcome of the case. Hashemi was taken into custody on Sunday in St. Louis, where she had been filming a Black Lives Matter documentary. The FBI agents apprehended her upon her arrival at St. Louis Lambert International Airport en route to Denver. Her son Hossein Hashemi told Press TV that he and his siblings had also received subpoenas to appear before a grand jury in Washington. Hashemi was a Muslim convert who had been living in Iran since 2009. She was in the U.S. to visit a brother who was ill and other family members. She told her daughter she'd been handcuffed and shackled and was being treated like a criminal. She also said she had her hijab forcibly removed and had been photographed without her headscarf upon arrival at the prison. Thus far, the FBI has refused to comment on her arrest. Hashemi was born Melanie Franklin in New Orleans, Louisiana. We hope in our next newscast to have an update on her Friday court appearance. And we will continue to follow this story until Marzia Hashemi has been either released or had her case disposed of, and we thank Press TV for the information that they've provided. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.